Good. Christine? Yeah. And if you share first for about 20, 30 minutes, over to you, Keith. Thank you so much.
I'm Keith. I'm recovering from addiction. My clean date is
Keith.
4th of July, 2000.
Hi, Keith.
Hi,
Last
everybody.
year.
I'm
Okay. It's coming
grateful
up.
that, yeah, I'm grateful to be here today. Yes, my anniversary is next week. Grateful. Thank you for asking me to share. Always grateful for the opportunity, because for one really important reason, and that is, illness recovery is my recovery now. There's this is my recovery experience. This is what I know the most about now, unfortunately. And so I live my life now trying to utilize the tools of our program, the principles of our steps, to navigate life, living in a sick body, and like so many others in our fellowship. And it's a challenge for all of us. Being sick is a challenge every day. I didn't, the truth of the matter is I was healthy, my whole life. Even though I didn't take care of myself, even though I abused a variety of substances, I was still pretty healthy. And I stayed healthy, physically, until I had 15 years clean. And that was the first time I got sick. And I got this, and part of it was my fault. I live in a very dry, arid climate, and so I had a humidifier, but I didn't properly service it. And so bacteria got built up in it, and that bacteria got in my lungs and damaged my lungs, and I was very sick. And I was facing a situation where my doctor told me that they were going to have to give me some medication. And I hadn't really confronted that before. I'd listened to many other addicts talk about illness, talk about medication, but not something that I had come for myself. And so I had to start thinking about it really quickly. So, the first thing I did is I read our literature. I read in Times of Illness, and I talked to my sponsor about it, and I reached out to a couple other addicts who were sick for guidance and for experience, strength, and hope. And my doctor said, "Look, either you take this medication, or I'm going to put you in the hospital because you're going to die." And that would be stupid, to be so adamant about my about not using medication that I'm going to allow myself to die. That would be pretty stupid. And so, what I decided to do was create what I call a circle of accountability. And there were six people that I asked to be part of my circle. Five agreed to it. Four actually participated. And so I used this medication, and every time I did, I called another addict. That was the first thing I did. Then I wrote it down in my medication journal. And then I talked to my sponsor about it every day. That worked. And I felt comfortable with that process, because I realized that going forward, illness and recovery was very much about accountability. And it was about transparency. And that, all the things you guys taught me about telling the truth about what's going on were essential if I was going to navigate, being sick. And so 3 years after that, I got cancer. It was stage 4 cancer. It was bladder cancer. And the truth is, I spent a lot of time praying about what to do because I had choices to make. And that's the interesting thing about being sick. There are choices to make. And you guys taught me in this program through the 12 steps, through sponsorship, and through sharing your experience, strength, and hope with me to be responsible and accountable for my recovery and for my well-being and for the decisions that I make. That I didn't get to have my sponsor or my friends make these decisions. I had to make them for myself. And I never knew how to do that before I got clean. I mean, I learned all these things as a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And for a while, truthfully, I had almost pretty much decided that I was going to let myself die. I was 60 years old, and I thought, you know what? I've had enough. I'm going to just let myself die. And what happened was, two people that are friends of mine in the program came to me, and my first friend, who's since passed away, broke my heart, said to me, "You know, I understand where you're coming from, Keith, but I would ask you to think about us. What about us? What about the people who love you? Don't we get a voice in this decision?" And I was stunned by this. And then I realized that, you know, the fact that I had cancer had driven me right back into my self-centeredness. And so I started thinking about that. I started asking other people what they thought. Not just telling them what I had decided to do. I was asking them what they thought. And that was more in line with the values that I had developed as a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And then a second friend, still my friend today, came to me, and she was not kind and gentle. She said, "Fuck you. You can be saved. We want you to fight for your life." And at that time, just right then, we had lost a member of our fellowship, a well-respected and well-loved member of our fellowship, and he couldn't have been saved, but I could be saved, and she insisted that I save myself, and so it was those two people that brought me out of my self-centeredness and helped me find the courage to fight, because it was a hard fight. It was a very hard fight. And I went through what most cancer patients go through. You know, I had multiple surgeries, I had lots of chemotherapy and lots of radiation. And it was brutal. It was just brutal. And you know, and I had to ask for help, because you guys taught me that when I need help, I need to own that and ask for help. You know, and I needed to have a meeting at my house. You know, and I was always one of those people that thought, over the years, I had seen some addicts get help from the fellowship and some not. And I always assumed that I would be one of the people that wouldn't get any help, that nobody would show up for me. I always assumed that that would be the case. And I was wrong. I asked a guy that I know in the fellowship if he would organize meetings at my house. And they did. And for 6 months, there was a meeting at my house every Sunday night. And people showed up. And the most fascinating thing about that is that it wasn't necessarily my friends. There were lots of people that showed up for those meetings at my house that I haven't seen since. And that was an incredible lesson for me, that they weren't there for me. They were there because it was a suffering addict in need, and it just happened to be me. And that was an important lesson for me to learn. And the other really kind of remarkable thing that happened during those meetings was that people started sharing things that I had never heard them share before. And so, by some weird twist of fate, these little meetings at my house were a safe place for other people to share things that they weren't comfortable sharing in a full meeting, which, again, that blew my mind. And I came to understand that those meetings weren't for me. They were for everybody else. And that's the way my experience was, that there was a series of revelations all the way through the process of fighting for my life. Because that's what happened. And in the end, you know, the cancer went into remission. But the cancer itself and the treatment did major damage to my body, major damage. And that damage unfolds over time, because that's how radiation works. It unfolds over time. And you start to feel the full impact over time. And so I had to learn to start dealing with these impacts. You know, the chemotherapy drug they gave, one of the chemotherapy drugs they gave me kidney disease. And you know, that's a side effect. You know, it saved my life, but there's a cost. And there's always a cost. When it comes to illness and recovery, there is always a cost. There's always a trade-off. And that was one of the hardest things for me to accept. I really needed to work hard on acceptance for some of these things because I was angry. You know, I didn't feel like a victim when I got cancer because I knew that that's just life on life's terms. And I had done a lot of step work. And one of the things we discover when we do step work is that for some of us, yes, we may have been victims as a child, like I was. But once I grew up, the only person victimizing me was Keith. And anyway, so for the last, you know, 5 years, I've been living with the consequences of cancer and now living with the consequences of kidney disease, which are significant. And it's hard. You know, the life I had before is gone. It's long gone. And at this point, you know, I'm stable, but my quality of life is in decline. And that's kind of hard to cope with. And one of the things I noticed as I go on this journey of illness and recovery is that my tendency toward my imagination has become more pronounced. You know, when I was a little kid, bad things were happening. And when you're little and bad things are happening, you go into your imagination as a way of coping with what's happening because you have no power. You're a child. You have no power. And so I spent my whole life doing that because that's what I learned to do as a child. I struggle with that now. I struggle staying in the present moment because the present moment is difficult and it's very often filled with pain. You know, I'm in pain every day of my life now. Some days it's just mild pain, which is really great. And sometimes it's not. And like all sick recovering people, I learn on a day-to-day basis to do my best to cope. And there's lots of little things that I do. And one of the things is I go to meetings. I talk to other addicts. I do all the things you guys taught me to do. And if I'm lucky, I'm awake in the morning before it gets too hot, and I can go sit in the park and just watch the birds and look at the trees and just and feel the joy of being alive. And that's the other part that has happened to me is that, you know, I was not a joyful person when I got here. And for a long time after, I was not a joyful person, you know, because I had to get help outside the program before I was able to really experience joy. And I can experience joy today because of the 12 steps and because of the help that I got outside the program. You know, and you know, and I've had some follow-up surgeries, and now I have what are called nephrostomy tubes in my kidneys, since my urinary system no longer functions. So I have these tubes coming out of my back, and they work pretty well, but they're painful, and I'm in kidney pain all the time. Sometimes it's really bad, and that's just life on life's terms, you know, and sometimes I get angry about it. You know, I tried to remember, did anybody ever tell me that that particular chemotherapy drug was going to give me kidney disease? I can't remember. They might have. So I can't be too angry at them. But I remember, you know, when we were getting ready, you know, I had a sponsee that I just finished getting through the 12 steps. And I told him that I couldn't be a sponsor anymore. Because I was too sick, and that I needed him to be my medical power of attorney, and he agreed to do that, and he still does that for me today, and he's become my friend, and I'm so grateful for the relationships that I formed in Narcotics Anonymous. Because if I didn't have relationships in our fellowship, I wouldn't be able to cope with my circumstances. I just wouldn't be able to cope, and so I'm grateful for that. And I remember we're trying to figure out what am I going to need. You know, I couldn't think this through because I was sick and I was already on meds. And so I did what was suggested. You know, I started a cancer blog and it's still out there. I don't write in it very often anymore, but it's still there. You know, I spoke to a few nurses that are in our program, and one of them had a sponsee that wasn't working full time and was looking to pick up some hours as a nurse. So she became my nurse caregiver during the whole 6 months of cancer treatment. I paid her, of course, And that made all the difference in the world, having someone there. Because it's being sick and being alone is lonely and frightening. But having someone there really just makes all the difference. I'm so grateful for that. And I'm still in remission from cancer, as far as I know. My checkup won't be until the fall, but every year I've been doing okay. But the damage, my body can, I'm frail now. You know, the treatments and the cancer made me frail, and the kidney disease doesn't help. And I have liver disease too, stage one, and which is kind of, it's like, of course I'm an addict. Of course I have liver disease. You know, it's not bad now. Something else is going to kill me long before that does. So I'm not really too worried about it. And I have a few other kind of medical conditions. So I'm one of those, I've become one of those people that has this long list of medical conditions. And, you know, and I have to take meds every day. And I'm not talking about pain meds. I'm just talking about regular, you know, medications for, you know, for various conditions that I have, you know, cholesterol and whatever. And so, but I do that. And these are just regular medications, but I take them precisely as prescribed. You know, whether it's a Tylenol or if it's my cholesterol medication, whatever it is, I take them precisely as prescribed. And I learned about how to do medication and recovery by being sick. You know, it's one thing to read about it in our literature. It's another thing to hear about what other people have done. But when it comes down to it, I'm the one who's sick, and I'm the one that has to make decisions. And I have to be responsible and accountable for those decisions. And so I still have my circle of accountability. During my cancer treatment, it ballooned up to 12 addicts. So, because, you know, I had to make a lot of phone calls, a lot of phone calls. And now it's down to three, but you know, my health is in decline. And so I'm thinking about adding a person or two to my circle, because things are starting to get worse. And I still do exactly what I've always done. You know, you could come, if you came to my house, you could see my medication journal. It's sitting right there on the table. And you can see every medication I've taken in the last 6 years. You can see the day I took it and the time I took it. And it's all right there. That's the kind of transparency that is necessary to maintain my recovery through times of illness. And if you're part of my circle of accountability, you know all of that too, because you experience it. Thank you. And anyway, you know, now I have a hip fractures. And so my health has declined a lot in the last 9 months. And I'm scheduled for surgery in August. And I may have it moved to September. We'll see. I need to talk to him about it. But my quality of life has taken a serious hit. I can't walk without a cane now. So, and at some point I'll be on a walker. So my quality of life is declining. And I'm starting to ask myself, how long do I want to live? Because I'm responsible for the, accountable for that decision too. Now, I can't predict if I'm going to have a heart attack or get in a car accident or anything like that. But barring something for that, I get to make a choice. How long do I want to live? You know, what are my values? And this is where everything you guys have taught me comes down to that. More the issues of death and mortality, you know, and how do I confront them? I confront them based on spiritual principles. I confront them based upon what you guys have taught me about being responsible and accountable. You know, I have to decide what's important to me. And I've made the fundamental decision, which is longevity is not important to me. And you know, quality of life is what's important to me. And the other thing is, and quite honestly, you know, I'm not afraid of dying anymore. I was. But once you face down cancer, you're just not afraid to die anymore. You know, that just eradicates that fear. And I'm so grateful to be free of that fear, that self-centered fear. And so now it's about What does it look like for me to say I've had enough? I'm not entirely sure yet, but I'm working on it because I have to make that decision at some point. When am I ready to go? When am I going to say, you know what, guys, I love you, but it's time for me to go because I don't want to be here anymore. I don't want to suffer. You know what? I have suffered these last 6 years. Not every day and not all the time, but I know suffering now. And before I got sick, physically sick, I knew what many of us know. I know about emotional and psychological suffering. Because as an addict, as an active addiction, I suffered every day. I just didn't know it that I was suffering. Once I got clean, then I started to experience that suffering that comes from being just all torn up inside. But over time, through working the program, all those emotional and psychological wounds got healed. I'm not all torn up inside anymore like I was because of the 12 steps, because of this program, because of you guys. One of the hardest things about being sick is not being able to go to in-person meetings and get hugs. Those hugs changed my life. Because before I came to Narcotics Anonymous, my experience was if somebody's trying to touch you, something bad is about to happen. But you guys taught me that that's not always true. And I've been very grateful for that. I go to my home group on Tuesday nights, and that's when I get hugs. And occasionally I'll go to another in-person meeting. But usually, my recovery happens on the screen now. And I'm okay with that. And I do the best that I can. I have two canes, one for in the house and one for when I leave the house. And I'm still teaching myself to use the cane inside the house because I'm frail. And I have a very hard floor and I don't want to fall. And so I have to learn that. I have to create these new behaviors. And that's one of the things we do in recovery is we create new ways of living. And that continues through illness, new ways of living. I can only sleep on one side of my body because of my hip. I have to use a cane to navigate the house. I have a grabber. Old people have grabbers so we don't bend over and fall. I have two grabbers, one on each side of the room. These are this new way of life. The new way of life that we talk about in the program, it evolves over time. And I have this another new way of life, and it's trying to navigate the world in this sick body of mine. The most fascinating thing, and I mentioned this earlier, is joy. I am still capable of joy. And for me, that's kind of the litmus test about whether I want to continue to live or not. Am I capable of still experiencing joy? Am I actually experiencing joy? If I am, maybe I should stick around for a while longer. And that's kind of where I'm at about death and dying. And I'll kind of close with this. During the course of my illness over the last 6 years, lots of other people that I know have gotten sick as well. Many have died. During COVID, I lost 8 or 10 people that I know, several that I love deeply. There's no replacement for those people in my life. There's these big empty holes where those people used to live. And that's part of the experience of aging and illness, too. Everybody goes through that. You start losing people, and there aren't anybody to replace them. And so there's this new kind of loneliness that kind of creeps in. And it's not the kind of loneliness that I had before I got clean. This kind of loneliness it's specific to specific people. I am lonely for my friend Tommy O'Reilly, who died 2 years ago with more than 30 years clean in this program. I miss him. I miss him terribly. And so I have this kind of loneliness. My friend Leslie Wynell, she was in this program. She's dead. And I have this loneliness for certain people. And that was a new experience for me. I never had that before. And the reason I never had that before is because in active addiction, I was incapable of being emotionally close to anybody. I was incapable of being a good friend. But you guys taught me how to be a friend. You know, you guys taught me how to be a son. And, you know, my mom has since passed, but because of the ninth step, there was nothing left said unsaid between us. I remember being at my mother's funeral, and people said, "Oh, we're so sorry." I'm like, "I'm not. She was suffering. I'm glad she's gone. I wanted her to die. She was suffering." And that's one of the things we do over time in Narcotics Anonymous. We begin to think more about other people than ourselves. And you know, I as some of you know, I experienced a miracle this year. I got into affordable senior housing, which is no small thing in the United States or in the UK. And everybody in this building is sick. Everybody. And so it's a very interesting experience to, on a daily basis, everybody that I meet is just like me. And so I get this whole nother level of identification. You know, I don't just get identification at NA anymore. I get identification in my apartment building because everybody's got a cane or a walker or a wheelchair. Everybody. And so, and it's very interesting. You know, I go to my home group and there's several other addicts who wear canes. And I always make a joke that I'm so glad I'm not the only person with a cane. And that's just my way of acknowledging identification. So, you know, we are here in the United States, we are an aging fellowship. I don't know what the status is in the UK, but I think it's similar. There's a lot of addicts who've been clean for a long time, and they're starting to get sick and they're starting to die. And we're starting to go to funerals, not for addicts who overdose, but for addicts who died of kidney disease or cancer and died clean. What a miracle that is. It's amazing. You know, and I've been to some of those funerals, and it's such a wonderful thing. And so that's where I'm at, you know, in my journey of illness and recovery. I'm doing the best I can on a daily basis. And some days are bad and some days are okay. Today's okay so far, and I'm really grateful for that. And I'll just briefly mention medication again. One of the other things that's really important for illness and recovery with issues of medication is that I only have one single prescriber. Only one. You know, that's a boundary. You know, only one doctor gets to give me meds. Because as an addict, you know, I'm prone to doctor shopping. It's part of the pathology of addiction. And so that's another boundary that I have in place for myself. You know, only my primary care doctor does my medication. And she knows exactly. She knows about my medication journal. She knows about all of it. You know, I'm transparent with her. And that's the way it needs to be. Because I have enough to deal with right now, every day. But I don't have to worry about that because I have these strong systems, procedures, and principles in place to protect my recovery. And I'm really grateful for that. And finally, I have I have what's called a minor cognitive impairment, and it's caused by the chemotherapy. We call it chemo brain. My brain doesn't work the way it used to. You know, I have more than just age related kind of, you know, intellectual problems, and I have to learn to live with that too. And I'm doing the best I can. So. Anyway, I am very grateful that HGNA has an illness and recovery meeting. I'm very grateful that 4 years and a few months ago, I stumbled into HGNA during the pandemic like everybody else who wasn't there before. And I'm so grateful to continue to be part of the kind of extended HGNA family across the world. And thank you for asking me to share, and I'll keep coming back.
Thank you very much, Keith. That was wonderful.
Keith. Thank you, Keith.
Not sure how to stop the recording. If someone could ask, please stop the recording for me. Otherwise, I'm sure Steve will take out only the clean time, the share. I'll